Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
This is the story of a gourmet's unhappy end. My lamented cousin Herbert was a gourmet fond of turbot. And other fish? He would try 'em. He'd gut and clean, and then he'd fry 'em. He adored fresh veg in season, which he thought the perfect reason to cultivate a garden patch and compliment the fisherman's catch. It seemed at first he would succeed, his crops supplied his every need. His table groaned beneath the weight of what he piled upon his plate. Of course, he grew quite fat, I fear. His chins wobbled from ear to ear. Then, one day, to his frustration, there came an aphid infestation. The dreaded plague of small green flies began to spread before his eyes. He tried a spray of soapy water. Plants wilted still, despite the slaughter. They faded, looking sick and pale. He saw that his whole crop might fail. And falling into dark despair, he took to drink to ease his cares. He wrote to gardeners question time. They said, "Why not dig in some lime?" His vegetables rotted from the roots. They'd meant the mineral, not the fruits. He sat and sulked within the shed, where he was known to keep it said, his stock of weed killer and drink. He made a mistake, that's what we think. He lay, a bottle in his hand. An accident, we understand. Alas, my cousin Herbert died. The inquest verdict, herbicide.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a Kishka's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Alsip Nursery, offering the best of every season since 1969. I'm sorry, I started laughing on Kishka. I'm like, what's that? You eat it? You don't sleep with it?
Happy Easter, everybody. You know, Dennis Sheeter, producing the show today, I miss having the harp and the keyboard in the studio, don't you?
I'm telling you, that was good. That was like your Paul Schaefer. You know what I mean? Letterman's Paul Schaefer. That was, you had a good thing going there.
Yeah, Tracy DeMarco was here last week with Brian Bradbury. But you know what I don't miss about that?
What's that?
Is the changeover between the two shows.
Yeah.
And dragging in a harp and a keyboard and an amplifier and all that stuff and plugging in and then trying to get that done.
There's a little physical labor involved in my job last
year. There is. Now, I'm looking at Facebook here today, and I love the way they do these things. They set it up so that you're in the middle of a radio show, and that's when they've decided they want to customize something for you, throw a new device at you. And this one says, your view of timeline pages can be customized in social fixer options or changed here. Learn more. You know what? I'm not interested. I already don't like the timeline thing.
The timeline thing's bizarre.
It's hard to find stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it. There's only one thing I like about it, and I like the big banner picture across the top.
Yeah,
that's
nice.
It. Uh-huh. That's it. End of story. You guys worked real hard on it. Epic fail. All right. it doesn't work for me. You know, that's so far, what I like about Twitter is they haven't been messing with it a whole lot.
Right to the point.
Yeah. And so Twitter stays the same. So feel free to tweet me, folks. My handle is Mike Now on Twitter. Couldn't get Novak because somebody already had it. That's okay. I like Mike Now. And, of course, you can go to the Mike Novak Show on Facebook. You can catch podcasts of the show every week. I get them up usually by the end of the day on Sunday. What are we missing? Streaming. We're streaming. If you can't get us on the radio, if you can't go old school, go new school with the streaming. Have I forgotten anything? I think that kind of covers the whole social media thing, right?
You covered it. That was good. All of them. There's like six of them.
You know, Dennis, it was adequate is what it was. It was adequate. Today's show, Easter Sunday, and I have folks who I invite to be on the show, and I'll invite them on different days. And for instance, I had some people that I wanted as guests on the show today.
Bless their heart for coming in on the holiday.
Really? And I got a couple live in studio. One of them sitting here with me right now, and that's Carl Zimring, who is the editor of a brand-new encyclopedia that, well, most of you probably aren't going to get, but that's okay. Because the resources there. No, he's laughing. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to diss you.
Good sales call there, Mike. Good sales call.
I know. I'm the worst. Okay. Do you want to leave now? Is it okay?
No. I'm here. The traffic is light. I might as well stay.
All right. he's also the one of the co-founders of the Sustainability Studies Program at Roosevelt University. What kind of a teacher professor are you?
I am a historian of waste.
And that's why he's here in the studio. And we will sell some encyclopedias. We will sell some. And you have to understand that I got a copy from him of this. It's two volumes, and it's about the size of a small SUV, both of them.
Better gas mileage.
Exactly. And I left them at home. I was gonna go, wow, hear that? That's the sound of waste. Or
put some reverb on and lower the octave, and that's about right for the
sound.
They
haven't shown me how to do the reverb here. Do we have reverb, Dennis?
I'm not sure. On the break, we'll check that out.
Yeah. But so we will talk about the Encyclopedia of Consumption and Waste, the Social Science of Garbage. And we do this because... just this week, talk about timing, the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, announces that he's rolling out blue carts to the whole city. And we'll talk about that, too, because if you think, folks, that it's a done deal, end of story, let's move on to the next problem. No, we haven't solved the recycling problem. We're not even close yet. Not even close. We'll talk about that. Brick to Mile weather, of course, in the second half hour. In the 10 o'clock hour, I'm going to talk a little bit about a trip I made. As you know, if you listen to the show, I've started shooting with Jennifer Brennan, Dig in Chicago, the new television show, which will launch on cable, on Comcast Xfinity, on April 21st, 10 a.m., Channel 102. Please tune in. But, you know, if you don't have Comcast, you can also catch it online. Not a big deal. You can go to YouTube. You can go to mydiginchicago.com. And we shot three episodes in 3 days this week. Yeah. Yeah. Carl's going, huh?
I'm impressed.
Yeah.
How much caffeine was involved?
And it nearly killed me. All right. But it was fun and inspiring and exhausting. Three episodes in 3 days, starting about sunrise on Monday morning and finishing at sunset on Wednesday and just going kind of full tilt boogie the whole time. And one of the places we went to was the Field Museum, where LaManda Joy from the Peterson Garden Project, and she's been on this show a number of times, is involved in something called Edible Treasures. And we will talk about that, along with Diane Ott Wheely, who's from Seed Savers Exchange. They're involved in Edible Treasures as well. And then finally, at the end of the second hour, Maureen Ewing, who's with the Green Metropolis Fair. You've been hearing a lot about that here at WCPT. Well, I'm speaking there next week at 2:45 on Saturday about organic veggies and plants and soil and good stuff like that. And I hope you'll come by. I have to cop to it. I've not been to the Green Exchange yet. Have you been there, Carl?
I have not.
We got to go. We got to go. Yes. Field trip to the Green Exchange, because that's where the Green Metropolis Fair is next week. So all that on the Mike Novak Show. Of course, your phone calls, welcome, 773-763-9278. Or tweet or Facebook, and we'll get to you. Carl Zimmering, glad to have you here on an Easter.
Glad to be here, Mike. Happy Easter to you and everyone out there.
Thank you. People say, well, you're gonna have a show on Easter? And I say, well, you know, if I didn't have shows on Sundays with holidays, there would be no radio program here. Every Sunday's what am I going to take off for Mother's Day and then for Father's Day and then for what else have we got? You know, every Sunday is a holiday. So Easter, And, you know, with me, growing up Catholic, if I had had a radio show when I was 8 years old, I'd have been a very happy guy, because then I wouldn't have had to go to church. Do you know any Catholics who like to go to Mass? I don't.
Not many.
No, I don't think so. But some do. I suppose some really have a great time. And actually, on Easter, it's one of the best times to be in a Catholic church. It's all, glitzy, and they got all the candles and all that stuff.
So, and chocolate afterwards.
And chocolate. Yeah, and I heard Mike Sanders and the crew in our town talking about eggs, Easter eggs and chocolate. Yep, there's an Easter tradition for you, at least in America. Carl Zimmering, who helped co-found the Sustainability Studies Program at Roosevelt University, and now editor of this two-volume set called Encyclopedia of Consumption and Waste. How long did it take to put this together?
Oh, let's see. This started in early 2010, and it came out about 3 weeks ago. So about 2 years of organizing over 80 authors on over 380 topics.
You know, I know what this is like, because I have actually written for encyclopedias before. I've never edited one. Kathleen has edited encyclopedias. And
so you've seen her twitch and the nervous tics about trying to get everything organized by the deadline.
Right, exactly. And everybody's different writing styles and trying to make sure that it all sounds like the same person wrote it. And that's what an editor is for. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful encyclopedia. Let's talk a little bit about what the focus is, because you have articles in there about just about everything, but it's all with that sustainability waste thing. For instance, I put something on my website from your entry on automobiles, and it's up there at MikeNovak.net, this week's show. This is what you wrote. It's interesting. Or the person who wrote the...
No, I wrote that.
You wrote the automobile one.
I wrote that
one.
Specific one. So right. We'll see if you can translate into English.
Okay. This is what Carl wrote. Despite calls for an industrial ecology approach to automobile assembly and disassembly that would eliminate hazardous wastes, more attention is paid to the performance of the machine, safety of the driver, and fuel efficiency of the engine than the life cycle of the product. The automobile has become more complex over time because of innovations that increase the enjoyment and safe use of the vehicle, but they also complicate disassembly. Over time, shredding and burning of junked automobiles has had environmental consequences, including the release of hazardous, corrosive, and carcinogenic substances into the ground, air, and water.
Should I translate that in English?
Sure.
Well, in 1923, we had a Model T. Most of a Model T is steel. Great thing about steel is easily recyclable. We can cut it up, melt it down, and turn into new cars, new buildings, new warships if we like those, but new industrial products. And automakers, steel manufacturers knew this, so they've always been trying to recycle old cars. Problem is, over time, if you go into your new Prius, even, which is a great car in terms of gas mileage, there's more than just steel in it. There's all sorts of other components. Mm-hmm. And those things, when you take the car apart, are part of the waste stream. Many of them are toxic. And a lot of those things, like an airbag, that helps the safety in an accident. You don't get killed. But airbags tend to have a carcinogen called sodium azide in them. And so when those get shredded and where do they go? The water, the ground, the air?
The bag itself or the air?
The bag itself has...
So what happens if you're in an accident and your face goes right into this? Are you inhaling that stuff?
No, you should be fine because it's a solid. The problem is when it decays over time, like asbestos, which used to be in brake pads, then you have problems. I mean, asbestos is in hundreds of thousands of houses as a flame retardant, and as long as it doesn't start to decay, you're not going to get cancer. Once it does, though, that's a serious health problem.
So what you're saying here is we are in love with automobiles in America, and now the world is in love with automobiles, and we kind of led the way.
1 billion on the road around the earth.
1 billion.
1 billion.
And we pay attention to a lot of things, and some of them are good,
mm-hmm.
like safety.
And fuel efficiency.
And fuel, well, not so much in America.
Well, we're trying a little bit more.
We're trying a little bit, but it's so pathetic. I mean, when Barack Obama comes out and says by 2025 we'll be up to 54 miles a gallon, you know, that technology will be two decades old at that point.
Indeed.
And the automobile industry will be patting itself on the back and saying, look what we did.
Assuming we haven't passed peak oil already and are up to 8 gallons.
Well, assuming we, yeah, exactly.
Too. Not to mention the climate change that would come from using so much carbon, mm-hmm. which is also covered in the encyclopedia.
Good. We're going to sell some encyclopedias. How do people... Okay, one of the things you can do, you can go to my website, mikenovak.net. There's a link to the Encyclopedia of Consumption and Waste, the Social Science of Garbage, and it's got everything in there. You cover... I was going to flip through the index, but of course I left it at home. But just, you know, you talk about all kinds of stuff that we make.
All sorts of things from kitchen appliances to toys to, well, the audio equipment that we're talking into at this very moment.
I bet this is really toxic stuff.
Computers. It's not as bad as my cell phone, but there's some stuff in there, yeah.
True.
Again, not so much worries about having them in the studio, but worries about how to handle them once they're outmoded and go into landfills
and
or whatnot.
And that's the point that I started to make about automobiles. We think about so many things, but the one thing we do not think about when we put a car together is what happens when it has run its course.
Indeed.
And it is no longer useful as an automobile and now is just parts.
If there's one thing that really unifies the encyclopedia together, and it's a very diverse encyclopedia, is that too often humans think of the waste that we classify as waste and we determine we don't want it in our houses, our garages, our communities. It leaves it somehow via a truck, via a boat, somehow, and it becomes out of sight, out of mind. And we think the consequences end there, but they don't. And how they don't is something that you can flip through the 1,200 pages and see the various ways in which our computers go to China, go to Nigeria, how the automobile batteries go to Mexico, and how garbage goes from the city of Chicago to landfills all over the United States.
We don't have just one in particular?
Not one. We've got a fair number. Now, also including the suburbs in that area, too. We've got some
Grace Lake. Yeah.
New York City tried to put their garbage on a barge and send it around the Caribbean to see if someone would pick it up. And they failed, and this boat was just going across the Atlantic for months
and months.
I remember that.
Yeah, when was that?
The Marlboro, 1987. And now New York City puts garbage in Virginia in a fairly poor rural community that pays for the privilege of being littered on.
Well, don't a lot of areas do that?
That's, exactly.
You know, that's part of the deal is that...
wealthy communities pay poor communities to take their waste.
And wealthy countries pay
Indeed.
Poor countries. So who's the beneficiary of most of the waste in the world right now in terms of being a country?
In terms of getting waste or benefiting from having the waste leave them?
In benefiting in terms of, I meant it in quotes, in air yeah. quotes, you know. Who's getting stuck?
Well, the interesting thing is there are a number of communities that are getting it, but particularly in North America, because the most consumptive country in the world is the one that we are broadcasting from, the United States of America. So a lot of U.S. waste goes to places like Mexico. But there's a global trade, and one of the things I should say about waste is not all waste is the same. Material we claim is garbage goes in a landfill or gets incinerated or goes in the ocean and is not reused again. But again, these computers, a lot of those will go on boats across the Pacific to China. So when we say who's the greatest beneficiary of the waste, well, which waste are we talking about? Mm-hmm. Are they the plastic water bottles we have? Are they the computers we have? Are the automobiles we're throwing away? It differs because there are different markets for different kinds of waste. And one of the points I want to, one of the reasons we did an encyclopedia is that scholars from all sorts of disciplines have been looking at issues of waste in different ways. Economists want to minimize lack of profit, which is a form of waste. Archaeologists actually dig into landfills to figure out what our habits are. Sociologists look at the racial and economic and gender inequalities with waste. And historians like me look to see how all this changes over time. So we thought we'd put all of this together in one large volume to show the diversity of approaches to studying waste.
Amazing. One would think that, well, I'm glad you're doing this, actually. Who does this? Who does this except Carl Zimmering?
And William Rathje, who was the consulting editor and was the original guy who started the garbage project in Arizona, where he actually did that to Tucson's garbage. He just dug down and saw, what were people in Tucson throwing away in 1950? How did it change in 1960 and 1970? And one of the things that happened is a lot more plastic.
Yeah, more and more and more and more plastic.
Much of which is now going into the Pacific Ocean. And so we have an entry on the Pacific Garbage Patch, which is larger than Texas.
Yes, in the Pacific gyre out there floating around and spinning. I first heard about that, I don't know, 10 years ago?
That's about right, yeah.
I interviewed, back when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial, I interviewed a guy who was on a around-the-world race. It was a yacht race. And he was in the South Pacific, nowhere near land, anywhere. And suddenly he came across this stream of garbage. And he followed it for days and days and days and never saw the end of it. And he said, this is in the middle of nowhere. We have polluted our oceans. We have sent all this stuff out. You can't even imagine the amount of garbage we have in our oceans
and
now.
And poisoning the animals that rely on the oceans to live. Albatross mm-hmm. eat that and then they die. And so albatross are endangered because of the plastic in our oceans.
All right. Well, that is Carl Zimmering.
There's your feel-good for Easter.
Yeah. Woohoo. Carl Zimmering, professor of waste at Roosevelt.
I talk trash.
He talks trash. Well, you must have a gazillion puns that you use about this.
Oh, yeah. My students are really sick of that. Yeah.
But I'm not.
Excellent.
I don't get it as much as they do.
I'll recycle my material then.
The editor of the Encyclopedia of Consumption and Waste, and I want you to buy one right now. Go online.
Have your library go to Sage Publications and order the Encyclopedia of Consumption and Waste.
Go to my website. And the link is there. It takes you to Sage Publications. Have your library do it. Have your town do it. Your municipality. Get it in your city library.
Because cities might have more enlightened waste policies if they read through the encyclopedia to see what other cities and countries are doing.
So one of the things that's really connected to waste, and this is where we have full disclosure that you and I are both on the board of the Chicago Recycling Coalition.
Yes, we've met.
And neither of us makes any money for it. Okay, I'm just
Indeed.
Making that clear.
Neither does the city in terms of recycling.
Right.
We'll
and
talk about
the
that.
The mayor just announced that our happy days are here again.
We've won.
Our problems
Reform,
are over.
Success.
Yay!
Miracle.
All right, but we'll give you the straight skinny on that, okay? When we come back on the Mike Novak Show, and if you are in the city of Chicago and wonder about recycling, 773-763-9278. You could give us a call and talk to us about that. Spring is blooming at Allsip Nursery, and right now they have everything you'll need to get your yard and garden in shape. Cold, hardy pansies, and guess what? We actually have had some cool weather, huh? Huh? We warned you. We warned you about that on this show. Rick DeMaio did. Cold weather pansies are now in stock. Plant them outside in garden beds or containers for a burst of color. Pansies are one of the few frost-tolerant annuals, and they come in a rainbow of awesome colors. And if you want to have the best lawn on the block, you have to start now. Yeah, now would be a good time. Allsip has all the best brands, including organic fertilizers, grass seed, and weed controls from Jonathan Green. So get to Allsip Nursery soon in Frankfort, Illinois, on Route 45, just 2 miles south of I-80, and in St. John, Indiana, on Route 41, 4 miles south of Route 30, and online at allsipnursery.com. They're open today, Easter Sunday. So head on over there right now. If you're in need of an Easter lily or a pot of beautiful flowering bulbs, pick one up on your way to Grandma's house.
I love gardening. What I don't love to see is deer and rabbits destroy my beautiful plants.
Why let your garden be destroyed? Plant Skid Repellent protects your garden, trees, and landscaping from wildlife damage. Made in the USA from 100% organic environment and pet-friendly ingredients, Plant Skid is the number one, most tested, most effective, and longest-lasting deer and rabbit repellent you can buy. It lasts up to 6 months over winter and 3 to 4 months during the active spring-summer growing season. Unlike other repellents, Plant Skid will not wash off in the rain and is guaranteed to outlast and outperform all other repellents. Plant Skid is OMRI-listed organic and is proven effective protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents. That's why Plant Skid is used by leading forest companies, nurseries, and conservation agencies, and is member-tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Locate a dealer nearest you at PlantSkid.com. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed, or your money back.
Plant Skid. That's spelled plant, S-K-Y-D-D. Plant Skid.
Here's a question for the Care of Trees tree doctor. Can a tree that is uprooted during a windstorm be replanted? I get that question all the time. People want to know whether, you know, because they figure the thing, the roots, you know, it's like your geranium comes out of the pot and you put it back in and it's you water it and it's fine. Well, here's the problem. The tree doctor says that when large trees are uprooted, so much damage has been done to the root system that they cannot be saved. Even if the trees could be uprighted and anchored, which would be very costly to do, the tearing of the roots will lead to decline in the canopy of the tree over the next several years, resulting in the necessity to remove the tree at a later date. Smaller trees can be uprighted and anchored, so they might have a chance, but there is always a risk that the tree will decline over time and ultimately need to be removed. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. Time for Dr. Wally's Tip of the Week, brought to you by Pesci's Garden Center in Des Plaines. Wally isn't a real doctor, so why does he get the best parking space? I'm just saying. If you're seeding a lawn this spring, Wally says to make sure the newly planted grass seed is kept evenly moist for 14 days. If it doesn't rain, well, you'll have water as much as necessary. Sometimes it means more than once a day. As grass seed germinates, the work will be for naught, wasting your time and money and possibly causing you to blame the quality of the grass seed. That's Wally told me this. He said, he talked to me yesterday and he said, you know, these people come in. And they've been doing this, and they don't water. They don't keep up with the watering for the grass seed. And then they say, you sold me bum seed. Well, no, it's you really do have to keep it constantly wet for about 14 days or until it germinates. So do that. And he says, don't use peat moss as a top dressing. It will wick the moisture away from the seed. Overdress your grass seed with a good grade of topsoil or compost, no more than a quarter inch deep. Or use a seed-starting mulch made from recycled paper. Pesci's Garden Center is just minutes off of I-294 at 170 South River Road in Des Plaines, or visit them online at pesci's.com. Find the link to more of Dr. Wally's tips on the homepage at mikenovak.net.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
You'd love what's going on behind the scenes here. Okay, there's change a-brewing in Chicago. More and more people are growing their own food. And along with that, something else is changing. Grand Street Gardens is now Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center. What does that mean? Some things you've never seen in a garden center, like beehives and chicken coops. that you can take home with you. Or how about the Green Team Growers Garden Club, created especially for kids? Of course, if you moms and dads want to stop by Mondays from 4 to 5 p.m., I'm pretty sure you'll learn something too. At Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, the cool season veggies are in. They have lettuces, broccoli, sugar snap peas, and more. And next Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., they're a proud sponsor of the Green Metropolis Fair at the Green Exchange, 2545 West Diversity at the Kennedy Expressway. Like I said, I'm going to be speaking there too. Stop by and find out more about Christy Weber Landscapes Farm and Garden Center, which is located at 2200 West Grand Avenue in the Ukrainian Village, and it is right in your own backyard. You have to be of a certain age to remember Fresh Garbage.
I have to disclose, I used to have a radio show called Fresh Garbage, and this was the theme song back in the late 90s.
All right. This is Spirit, in case you're wondering. Fresh Garbage. And that song must follow you everywhere, huh?
I like it. Fortunately, Spirit's good. If it was Journey, I'd be really depressed.
Why would you be depressed?
I do not like Journey.
Yeah, I had a conversation with Dennis and Mike Sanders a couple of weeks ago here in the studio after the show, and I have to admit, Journey and Styx and Kansas, and there's one other there, I can't tell them apart.
Boston?
No, Boston you can tell, that with that screaming guy, but...
Rush?
Rush, there we go. It's like those
different screaming guys.
They're all screaming guys from the 70s, and I swear to God, I can't tell any of those groups apart. They all sound the same to me.
I look forward to the letters you're going to get.
Nobody cares. It's Rush. It sticks. Come on. Give me a break. That's Carl Zimmering from Roosevelt University. He is the editor of Encyclopedia of Consumption and Waste, but we're going to talk about recycling for a little bit here before I let you go. All right. Mayor Rahm Emanuel came out this week and said, hey, This managed competition stuff is doing really, really well. We've just saved a couple of million dollars in 6 months. And so it's doing so well, we're going to give everybody blue carts. Before the end of next year. By the end of next year. I'm sure there's a lot of people jumping for joy. Actually, I posted something on the... Chicago Recycling Coalition Facebook page, and a bunch of people responded and said, yes, I can't wait. And interestingly enough, the timing's very interesting because 20,000 blue carts are being delivered
this week.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I lost my headset for a second, just like the sound went out completely. Oh, okay. Oh, Dennis was going to say something to me off the air. That's what happened. So 20,000 got delivered, including to my block. I now have blue carts.
Nice.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. All right. They put them out in front of your house, and you're supposed to take it back to the alley because it goes next to the waste cart in your alley. All right. I would say most of the blue carts are still in front. More than a week later,
has the city told your neighbors what to do with them?
Well, they sent out some things early, but not much. There isn't much education on this.
To put in the carts, where to put the carts, what day to put the carts.
Here's the thing. When you get your blue cart, there is a little pamphlet in there, encased in plastic, of course. That, I love the irony of that. It's in plastic. Well, you don't want to get it contaminated, you know. And they're supposed to put them on little hooks, so they're easy to get to, but most of them I don't think they're doing that with. And by the way, waste management does the recycling in my neighborhood. But the carts, I think, were actually dropped off by the city, I think. And at any rate, so there's this little pamphlet. It's in the bottom of the cart.
How deep of a cart? It's a pretty deep cart.
It's like 5 feet. Yeah. Okay. So you have to dig down
you
there.
You can put your 8-year-old in the cart to fish it out.
Your what?
You could put your 8-year-old child the cart to fish it out.
Right. You grab your kid by the ankles and lower him or her down there and say, hey, get that little pamphlet there.
not very accessible.
Right. It's not. And the pamphlet tells you about the recycling and what you're supposed to do. But here's the other thing. The pamphlet says, welcome to curbside recycling.
Where's the curb?
It's in front.
Where's that supposed to go?
In back.
Yeah.
So what we're saying here, folks, is, oh, and then the next day, a couple of days later, I went out back to see the blue carts that had actually gotten put in my alley, the ones that were filled with garbage. We have a learning problem here, a learning curve that we have to get over in the city of Chicago. And part of the problem is that the recycling has been so bad for so long. But just because you get a blue cart doesn't mean that people are going to recycle properly.
Indeed. Education needs to happen, and the city needs to work on that.
Education, 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 and then more education. And then we'll start to make a dent in this problem. Now, that being said, it's good that the mayor has said that he's going to roll out blue carts, but there's still a whole segment of the population that's not being accounted for.
Yes. The claim this week that recycling will go to the entire city by the end of 2013 is based on a technicality, the technicality that everyone who could be eligible for a blue cart will get a blue cart by the end of next year. That seems plausible. Who gets blue carts? Households, single-family dwellings, small buildings.
Four units or fewer.
Exactly. Now, for those of you who live in the city of Chicago, you may be aware that there are few people who live in somewhat larger buildings. And whether you're in Streeterville, Washington Park, Lincoln Park, or Englewood or Andersonville, you've got... Well, there's a law in the books called the Burke-Hanson Ordinance. It's been there for 21 years that mandates that larger buildings hire a recycling contractor to pick up the recycling from your building. This has never been adequately enforced, so we have many, many residents across Chicago who are not getting recycling, and they will not be getting blue carts. Question is, what's going to happen to them? When is the city going to mandate and enforce the mandate that large buildings also get recycling services? We don't know. The city's not talked about that.
Mm-hmm. It's and the city really hasn't talked much about anything. There really hasn't been any transparency. I know Rahm Emanuel likes to talk about how transparent his administration is, but in terms of recycling, every so often, every few months, he comes out with a proclamation. Oh, look, we're doing managed competition. Oh, look.
It's a success.
It's a success. Oh, look, the rest of the city is going to get blue carts.
And my worry about is the determination of the success is it's costing less to put more carts out, which is good. That is important. But what I worry about is there's an assumption under there that recycling is like garbage. You have a service, there's a bin, you put things in the bin goes away, therefore the service is a success. With garbage, most residents can say, yeah, that's true. Because then you've got no garbage in your neighborhood. You've got no garbage in your yard. It's clean. But recycling is not garbage. The way recycling works isn't simply that a magic blue cart goes away and it's then out of the environment and it's no problem. Recycling gets put back into industrial production. Old cars, old cans, old papers become new cars, new cans, new papers because someone purchases those collected materials and turns them into new goods. If the city is not effectively getting that material back into industrial production, we're not recycling. We're just paying a lot more to throw garbage away in blue containers. Now, do we know what the recycling rates are for the carts in the managed competition trial? Do we know the difference between what Streets and Sanitation is picking up in their couple of zones versus what Waste Management and what Midwest Metals Management is doing in their zones? We don't know those answers. We don't know the recycling rates.
You're probably in over people's head right now because I dare say a lot of people in Chicago don't know that the city has all been divided into these...
Education.
They don't know who's picking up their recycling. They don't know, perhaps, that in certain areas of the city, there are city workers doing it who still have their jobs, and I'm glad they do. And to the credit, again, of the managed competition, they've become more efficient over the 6 months. It just shows that unions will work to save their jobs.
And a beauty of that, even if you're not very pro-worker, which I am, The other thing is anything that the city collects, the city can then sell to brokers. Because so that means not only are city workers keeping their jobs, but the city may be getting revenue from the collective
recycling. Well, and that's one of the things that the administration is not talking about. We don't know whether those goods are being sold and extra money is coming in. So right now the city says, well, you know, it costs the union guys a little more to pick up a blue cart per capita per blue cart than it does the private guys. And I want to raise my hand in the back of the room and go, does that include the money that's coming from the metal that and other goods?
What about revenues? Mike, your blue cart that Waste Management is picking up, Waste Management keeps every penny of revenue from that. They also get guaranteed profits off of their collections.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really market forces that they're working with.
And the other thing is when the mayor says that it costs more for the union city workers to and make no mistake, all the people picking up the recycling are union guys.
Just different unions.
Different unions. One's a municipal union and one's a union for the private contractors. And when you say the municipal union costs more to pick up, I can hear people saying, well, get rid of them. Get rid of the one that's more expensive. Ah, but what happens then? Then you're at the mercy of the private guys who can just jack up the rates.
Indeed. And I live in Oak Park, just west of the city. Waste Management has been the provider for garbage, yard waste, and recycling there for a few years. And last year, Waste Management, because they've bought up a lot of the other private competitors, they're the largest waste business on the planet. What they did is they came back to the village of Oak Park and said, well, it's time to renew, and we'll renew at a slight increase. But if you go out and look for other bids, we're going to jack up the rates much higher. So what happened?
Wow.
No bid contract. That's in Progressive Oak Park. They're doing this to thousands of communities across the country.
See?
And they have one-third of Chicago's recycling right
well,
now.
Well, and so...
There's an entry, by the way, on Waste Management in the Encyclopedia of Consumption and Waste.
Oh, is there?
Oh, yes.
Oh, I can't wait. When I go home, I'm going to read that.
They started in Chicago.
Did they?
Yep, almost 100 years ago.
So it is complex. I mean, what the mayor's doing right now is kind of carrot and stick approach, and he's holding the two sides at bay. He's trying to keep Waste Management from jacking up the rates or Sims. I don't know if they would. And meanwhile, he's
trying to keep the labor costs low for the city too.
Right. So it's a high wire act
and
right now.
My other worry is, you know, the city has had citywide recycling before. We've done that. We succeeded at getting citywide recycling. It was called the Blue Bag Program.
But it didn't work.
No, it was there was pickup.
Yeah, right.
But again, what happened? The recycling rate for the city, I don't think, ever cracked 12% of material diverted from landfills. And the point, if you're an environmentalist, is to divert this material from the landfills and the oceans. Get it back into industrial production. And the contractor that city worked with Blue Bags was Waste Management.
So there we go. The point is, and I
hope they're not a sponsor, Mike.
Yeah, I'm sure they're going to call me after the show and say, hey, I would love to sponsor that show.
Exactly.
The point is, there are still a lot of unanswered questions. There's still a lot to be determined. We really, Carl and I keep track of these things. We really don't know how the managed competition is working. They say they're going to release the numbers in June now.
Exactly.
I'd be interested in how that all works.
And the June release would be for numbers from the beginning of October of last year till the beginning of March of this year. So that managed competition phase, there's a half year of data. We just don't have it yet.
So we're looking forward to that.
And again, I just want to remember... recycling does not end at your cart. Recycling is a huge system that involves the consumers, the producers, and those people bringing the materials back and forth between the two. And we really have to make sure that the whole system is working.
Yeah, if you want to know more about this, get a class at Roosevelt University in the Sustainability Studies program. That's Carl Zimring. He's a professor there, also the editor of Encyclopedia of Consumption and Waste. You and I could go all day on this, but thank you for
coming.
That'd
be quite a format.
It would be. The waste form. It's the waste.
Waste radio 24/7.
You already had that, though.
Only for 2 hours.
Only for 2 hours. All right. Thank you, Carl Zimring.
Thanks much, Mike.
I'll be seeing you at the board meeting rather soon.
Sounds good. See you then.
Do you like it better in the sun or in the shade? I suppose it depends on what it means. But Sun and Shade DuraTurf from Bonide are premium seed lawn mixes that like it either way. These no-fuss formulas for full sun, sun and shade, and dense shade will grow you some nice, even grass in both sunny and shady areas, which means picnic time. Hey, boo-boo. Just make sure you invite me. The versatile sun and shade grass seed mixes spread easily and quickly repair thin and bare spots. And they're 99.9% weed-free, which will save you energy and time down the road. Try the DuraTurf Premium Grass Seed Mixes by Bonide. You can find them at these local retailers. Kelly Seed in Peoria, Illinois, Big R Stores, all locations, Growing Grounds in Bloomington, Illinois, or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you. While you're there, download the free Bonide Problem Solver app for use on your iPhone or your Droid.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Just because you don't hear about environmental issues in the news every day doesn't mean that they've been resolved. The proposal to dig an open-pit sand mine next to the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park is one of those issues. Right now, the sand mine is on a fast track to be created at the end of this year or early next year. Once that happens, there's no turning back. That's why ordinary citizens need to step up and voice their opposition to this unfortunate decision made by the LaSalle County Board, which will have detrimental effects on the environment and health to the people who live near Starved Rock. Go to openlands.org to read their action alert about this important issue. There you'll find contact information for Governor Pat Quinn, Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon, and Illinois Department of Natural Resources Director Mark Miller, as well as information to help you craft a personal message. Get more information at openlands.org and write to Governor Quinn today so that someday you can tell your children and grandchildren, I helped save Starved Rock.
I love gardening. What I don't love to see is deer and rabbits destroy my beautiful plants.
Why let your garden be destroyed? Plant Skid Repellent protects your garden, trees, and landscaping from wildlife damage. Made in the USA from 100% organic environment and pet-friendly ingredients, Plant Skid is the number one, most tested, most effective, and longest-lasting deer and rabbit repellent you can buy. It lasts up to 6 months over winter and 3 to 4 months during the active spring-summer growing season. Unlike other repellents, Plant Skid will not wash off in the rain and is guaranteed to outlast and outperform all other repellents. Plant Skid is OMRI-listed organic and is proven effective protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents. That's why Plant Skid is used by leading forest companies, nurseries, and conservation agencies, and is member-tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Locate a dealer nearest you at PlantSkid.com. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed, or your money back.
Plant Skid. That's spelled plant, S-K-Y-D-D. Plant Skid.
You want healthy, tasty vegetables, right? That's why you're planting them. Well, plant them right with Dr. Earth's homegrown probiotic vegetable garden planting mix. It's rich in earthworm castings, kelp meal, and fishbone meal, and ideal for organic gardens. All Dr. Earth's fertilizers are high in humic acid, a natural root stimulator, and have cold water kelp, a growth hormone. Doctor your earth with Dr. Earth, the multivitamin for your garden. 35 million satisfied customers can't be wrong. Visit DrEarth.com to find a dealer near you, and be sure to check out the Facebook page. Search Dr. Earth and click like for organic updates.
Special school, 'cause I am such a fool, and I don't need a single book to teach me how to read. Who needs stupid books? They are for petty crooks, and I will learn by studying the lessons in my dreams. So turn off the TV, 'cause that's what others see, and movies are as bad as eating chocolate ice cream. They only sicken me. Don't let me play football. I'll sack the quarterback and jack your brother.
So I got a tweet here. Who is that from? It's My Skinny Garden says, "You can't tell the difference between Styx and Journey. Are you on crack?" This is blasphemy. Yeah, I guess so. And you got tweeted there, Carl. When we decide something is waste, we send it away. think it ends there. It doesn't. Goes all over the world. And one of the things you learn in the waste business is there's no such thing as away anymore. Let's go to the phones. Rick DeMaio. How you doing, Rick?
Buona Pasqua, Mike.
Huh?
Buona Pasqua is Italian for Buona Pasqua.
Oh, okay, good. That's what I thought.
Yeah, Happy Easter, that's what that means.
Oh, really? Do you actually speak Italian?
Yeah, parla lentamente.
Oh, well, you're going to inject some of that into the show sometime.
I just did.
Oh, okay, fine.
You missed it. Yeah, but a beautiful Easter Sunday, isn't it? Gorgeous out there.
It's been, the weather, I got to tell you, we shot Dig in Chicago Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And
right, it was cold at the lakefront.
It was, you know what, not until, really, until Wednesday when we were away from the lakefront. There was the threat of rain. You know, the forecasts were all saying, oh, Tuesday you're going to get some rain, and Wednesday you might get and nothing.
No. There was never really that much of a threat of rain, but I mean, the Lake Michigan water temperature right now, even though it's 48 degrees, I have the mid-lake buoy, and it's about 8 degrees warmer than normal. The fact that this air mass came in with the vengeance, I mean, it kept temperatures on Thursday. We had a high of only 49. That's pretty decent for this time of the year when you're about 6 degrees below average with bright sunshine.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually lucked out with the fact that even though we had temperatures get down to 35 one morning in O'Hare and 34 another, a couple of outlying areas, got down to the freezing mark. It wasn't technically a hard freeze. So the tulips, I think, did okay. I know a lot of daffodils, those only last for about a week anyway. Those pretty much bit
well, the dust. No, that's not true. They can last longer. I had some people. It's interesting. The plants, some of them came up real early, and they were done very quickly. But I have noticed that the ones that managed to come up later, they've been hanging on because the weather's got the weather got cool again, and
exactly
that's
right.
What
yeah,
we
I,
like
I guess
to
I
see.
Had to, I think the bulbs that were probably not so much force, but I noticed there was a bunch of daffodils around the Loyola area that I think more or less were beaten down by the wind. They got real tall real quick and just kind of got pushed down a little bit. They didn't do too well. But the tulips, I always say, you know, tulips like cool weather. And so far we're doing okay. So even though we were under a freeze warning a couple of nights, we didn't technically get down to a hard freeze, which is 28 degrees for 4 hours. But I got a feeling, Mike, this coming Wednesday night and Thursday, we may be getting closer to that range, this next air mass that comes through late tomorrow and into Tuesday. Noticeably cooler even, I think, than the one that we just recently had. And on top of that, the wind the next couple of days is really going to pick up a lot. Today, though, absolutely perfect weather.
Wear your Easter bonnet today.
And all the thrills upon it.
Exactly. How are we doing, though, in terms of moisture?
Good question there, because we had about an inch and a half to 2 inches of rain with those last couple of events. And surprisingly enough, I'm not too sure why the Weather Service is doing this. I don't go out on a limb to criticize the Weather Service, but
oh, sure you do.
Flag. No, really, I know. I mean, they do a great job down there, but we're under a red flag warning again, and that's for, you know, the possibility of if you're burning any sort of outdoor brush, you got to worry about low relative humidities and wind, you know, kind of getting things out of hand. But it seems like more and more we're under these red flag warnings, and there's really not much of a need for it, particularly through the fact that the ground, to me, is kind of moist. We've had some decent rain lately. Even though we've had some high evaporation rates, it's not like we're in a middle of a dry spell or a drought. So anybody who's out there doing some yard work, just, you know, take it careful. Take it easy. Be a little careful because it's going to be windy. But other than that, the next best chance of any rain, probably not in any significant amount until maybe late today, Wednesday or Thursday. Over the next 5 days, we may see only about a quarter of an inch, but so far we're actually right about normal, about 2 inches of rainfall since the 1st of March, which is about maybe a quarter inch below normal, but still for this time of the year, that's not too bad, because going into the spring season, our subsoil moisture and subsoil temperatures were really, really beneficial for growing. I think they were somewhere in the mid-40s. For this time of the year, that's about almost 5 to 8 degrees above normal there.
Yeah, it's almost as if that whole March thing never happened. You know, we're getting more or less normal temperatures and the usual threat of a frost or a freeze. And yet I still wonder, and I think other people wonder, whether there will be some consequences for that later in the season.
Well, I think I know what you're saying, because the recent weather now has become more normal, so it makes you forget about what happened. But I think from an agricultural standpoint, it did happen, obviously, because of all the trees and everything blooming. The farmers are way ahead of schedule. I guess the next question is, is what does that mean for future warm-ups, you know, in this era of changing climatic conditions and higher rates of climatic variability? Is that something that's going to be more of a norm? And, you know, how do you prepare for it, and how do you analyze it, and how do you put it into the context of science? You know, we had this great question last week at NIU in one of my grad classes. We were talking about the difference between science being used as a form of analysis or science being being used as a method of inquiry to make things or make people think about things more in the future. And a way of applying this to weather is weather is a science, but climate is more of a tool used to analyze and explain weather. And I think more and more climate is becoming more of a science because we're looking at these trends and going, huh, where does this come from? Where do we get the data from to kind of compare past climatic events as opposed to saying, well, that thunderstorm was weak and that thunderstorm was strong, and we know why because here's all the data underneath it that supports it. Climate's different there. So there's been some very, very interesting discussions flying around the meteorological electronic world. And I think it's going to take us another month or so to kind of synthesize all that.
Well, in the meantime, they're practicing
science.
And,
yeah.
and so are you.
That means time for the forecast,
it
right?
It does, exactly.
Yeah.
I should use that as the cue each week. Is that when you hear that, it's time to go into the forecast?
That's fine with me. So a lot of sunshine today, west wind, so no threat of a lake breeze, but temperatures probably getting up to about 66 to 67 degrees. Tomorrow, though, the winds shift around to the northwest. A lot of clouds in the afternoon, but no threat of any rain yet. Temperatures tomorrow probably low to mid-50s, but probably only mid to upper 40s on Wednesday and mid to upper 40s on Thursday. And I think the best chance for any freezing conditions, probably not until Thursday morning. I think the wind Wednesday morning is going to keep temperatures in the mid-30s. But if you just have to do anything to protect your sensitive plants like you did the last time, whatever you did, do them again for Thursday morning. After that, it looks like it warms up and we get back into a wet pattern, Mike. So I think once we get past this week, the threat of any long-term freezing conditions are gone.
Yeah, you say that now, and then when it happens, okay. But I'll believe you for now. All right, Rick DeMaio, got any TV coming up?
Yeah, I'll be on Channel 2 next Saturday. And let's see, I think that's about it for now. We'll see how things go after that.
All right.
That's my next gig. But you'll be on before me, right? No, you're on your TV shows on when, the 21st?
21st of April is 21st. When we launch
I'll
at 10 a.m.
I'll be watching and DVR and all those other things you do.
Well, I appreciate it.
All right, Mike.
We'll talk to you next week.
See you, Mike. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you. Rick DeMaio, you can go to DeMaioWeather.com or go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and he's on the homepage. All right, second hour, LaManda Joy comes in the studio. We'll talk about the Field Museum and the Edible Treasures Garden, which got planted this week. And Diane Ott-Wheely from Seed Savers Exchange. Stick around for all of that.
Hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees, and by Alsip Nursery, offering the best of every season since 1969. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
And I have my very own honky tonk woman here in the studio.
Nice.
You didn't see that one coming,
no, I didn't,
did you?
No.
That's LaManda Joy is here in the studio, and you know her. She's been on the show many times because she's with the Peterson Garden Project. Some of you know her as the Yarden on Facebook and on Twitter. You're just as busy as always this year. We're in a second. We're going to talk about the Edible Treasures Garden at the Field Museum. And as a matter of fact, let's get Diane Ott-Wheely on the phone as well. But before then, I wanted to chat a little bit about what's going on with the Peterson Garden Project. Actually, big changes in many ways. Probably the most profound is the spot where you gardened for the past 2 years, right?
Well, we always knew that that was going to be a short-term situation at that space, so that's not a problem for us.
But that's good. I mean, but that's – I think it's important for people to know that because a lot of folks want to set up community gardens in the city. And I think if you kill yourself trying to find the spot that you're going to be able to have for 50 years, you're going to be destined to be disappointed.
Precisely.
And you had a spot – this wonderful plot at Peterson and Campbell, and you had 157 gardens in there. And then they sold the lot.
Well, they actually didn't sell the lot, but they got a grant, and they're going to build a health clinic there, which is really awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And they might put a garden on the roof so we can have a forever victory garden. But our plan was never, to have a park or a long-term green space. It was really just to have an area where we could teach people to grow their own food.
Uh-huh. And but that's not even going to slow you down because you've got other gardens coming up this year.
Yes, we're very excited. You know, last year, before any of this happened, we started thinking that, we'd had so much response to this garden and the way we set it up, the way we created the beds, the education that we provided, that people were interested in putting in other gardens. And it also, coincidentally, is the 70th anniversary of the first Victory Garden season of World War II, so that was 1942, so we thought, well, what could we do to sort of revive that spirit or celebrate that spirit in a way? So before the Occupy movement happened, we had this program we were going to call 1% for Victory, but now we obviously can't call it that.
Yeah.
But we wanted to do 1% of what those gardeners had done in 1942. So what that means is in 1942, Chicago put in 500 community gardens, so we wanted to put in five. 75,000 people started home gardening, so we wanted to teach 7,500 people how to grow their own food.
Uh-huh.
And 55% of the produce grown in the city, consumed in the city, was homegrown. So we wanted 5% of what we grew in our gardens to be donated to food and nutrition programs. So that's what we're doing. We're putting in five gardens. We're offering a series of classes to teach home gardeners, and we're beefing up our Grow to Give program and working with five different food agencies in the different neighborhoods where these gardens are located to provide fresh produce.
So it just goes on and actually gets better and better.
It's awesome. It's really exciting.
And are a lot of the same people who were in the Peterson Garden project at Campbell and Peterson, they've dispersed.
Diaspora.
Exactly.
Well, the really cool thing about that is that they understand how the community garden works. They understand the etiquette. They understand the sharing with others. So they're going to be the, pardon the pun, but they're going to be the seeds in the new garden to help teach those people how their communities will work.
I hate those gardening puns.
I know it. I can't help it. Sorry.
You've put together this really fun video on YouTube, and it's on my website on the homepage.
Oh,
I don't
great,
know.
Thanks.
Did you see it? And
I didn't.
And I've got it right here. Let's see if this comes up.
Their farms are not large. There are no broad acres, no tractors, no harvesters. But their hearts are full of it. There's a special reason to take
their hearts
farming.
Are full of it?
These are victory gardens. Gardens for
like
war.
During World War II, Chicago led the nation in the Victory Garden movement. This was a shock to almost everyone in the country because not only was Chicago the second largest urban area in the nation, but 90% of its citizens had never gardened before. I saw this photo at our local butcher shop. It was a victory garden in our neighborhood during World War II. In 2010, the lot was a weedy, trash-strewn eyesore. Inspired by the World War II story of how Chicago...
And on and on, and that's you speaking there, but I like the guy talking about the gardens, there's no Midwest there. It's some guy from New York going, and the hats are in the garden.
That was some nice World War II garden propaganda.
Yeah, I know. But if you can see that video on MikeNovak.net, and I love the old footage though of the
victory.
Was that actual Victory Garden footage from Chicago?
It is, yeah.
With the train going by in the background?
Yeah. That was done in, actually it was released in 1943, but that was the 1942 gardening season.
Mm-hmm. And that's when it all started. And so it's the, what'd you say?
70th anniversary.
70th? Mm-hmm. I can't add very well. But the and you're kind of an expert on that. You've been on the show before to talk about Victory Gardens. And I love the fact that Chicago was one of the best in the country at this. And the reason is because, from what I understand, it was the word system. In the, you know, going door to door. You know, not only do they get votes, they get godness.
That's right.
We get godness with hearts. You know, it's like the Wizard of Oz is like, if I only had a heart. And those guys were not from Kansas, you could tell. So there you go. It's so cool that you're just starting over and expanding. Even at a time when you lost the original space. So, you know, and that was the point, again, I want to get back to, that our garden, Green on McLean, in my neighborhood, we're pretty guerrilla gardeny, you know. It's just like throw the dirt down, throw the seeds down, let's go, see who shows up on a Sunday. Not very formal. We're not into the formality, and yet it works beautifully so far. You know, and that's the other thing. From year to year, you never know what's going to happen. It went great last year. This year, don't know. Can't tell you. You know, will the same people show up? Don't know.
Well, there's that cute little kid that likes to help you every day.
Oh, yeah. Jose. I think it's Jose.
Oh, he was cute.
And he shows up every day. He says, are we going to plant in the garden? Are we going to work in the garden today? You know, on days when I'm trying to duck out, you know.
Right.
It's like, no, I don't want to work in the garden. Okay, Jose, we'll go do something in the garden. But it's the kids in our neighborhood that make it a success. We're talking to LaManda Joy with the Peterson Garden Project and a bunch of things, including the garden at Field Museum. As a matter of fact, what we should do is go to the phones and bring in Diane Ott-Wheely, who's the co-founder and vice president of Seed Savers Exchange. Hi, Diane. How are you this morning?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Great. Where are you today?
I am sitting outside in Decorah, Iowa, on my porch looking at a yard full of blooming lilacs.
Yeah.
A month ahead.
A month early.
Yes.
Yikes. And I mentioned to you last week when I saw you at the Field Museum, Decorah is home of Eagle Cam.
It is. I wish we had Seed Cam here, but we just have the Eagle.
But the Eagle Cam is cool. So how many how many offspring are there? And for those of you who don't know, the Eagle Cam was put up there, what, a couple of years ago? I think the last year was the first year, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm, it was.
Yeah, and they put it like 80 feet up in a tree, and it goes 24/7, and the eagles nest, and they lay eggs, and then they hatch into eaglets, and then they feed them, you know, carrion, ripping off raw meat.
Yeah, people's pets get up there. They had to shut it down one day. No, they didn't really.
Wait, they had to shut it down because why?
Because I was kidding, because people's pets get drawn into the nest as food, but actually it was a rabbit, and they did shut it down, but it's part of nature.
I don't know. Yeah, why would you shut it down if a rabbit gets up there? I mean, that, I don't know.
We're
just too touchy-feely for our own good,
right,
aren't we?
Yes, yeah. But it's a wonderful opportunity to see the minute-to-minute life of what happens in an eagle's nest, and you know, it's quite amazing. And so many people have been, you know, I don't know how many hits there is, 100 million hits. I don't know how many followers they had last year, but it was amazing.
Well, anytime I go on an Eagle Cam, and I think you could just, if you just Google Eagle Cam, you'll probably come across it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get a commercial first. It'll, because on their site, I think it's a Ustream. Any given time, there will be 35, 40, 100,000 people watching Eagle Cam.
Right, yes. And especially today with Easter, it'd be nice to see an eagle hatching from the egg. And I think there are three of them now that are that have hatched.
I think they had three this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at Twitter, and it's weird. I'm sitting across from LaManda Joy, who's tweeting. And she does it there, and it pops up here. It's, yeah, don't you love technology?
Yeah.
Diane, it's wonderful to have you on the program. I'm so glad you're here because this is such a great project, the Edible Treasures garden at the Field Museum. And as I mentioned earlier in the program, we shot a segment for Dig In Chicago there. The timing was just perfect. You guys were putting it together, and we were shooting, and LaManda said, well, this might work. And it's like, holy smoke, it all came together very fast. Have you seen your picture, Diane? On
I have not. I haven't seen. I'm a little bit backward with my technology skills, so I haven't been able to find it yet, but I will.
Oh, just go to MikeNovak.net this week, and there's a picture. Have you seen the picture of Diane with dirty hands? And and that's what gardeners do. They get their hands dirty.
Exactly, yes. If you didn't, it would be something. It would be impossible to garden.
And the replica of Sue the dinosaur is behind you.
That's the Broccoliosaurus.
Broccoli, the Broccoliosaurus. I like it. The Broccoliosaurus needs to go in front of the Supreme Court and argue for Obamacare, you know. At any rate, who wants to start? How did this all come together?
Well, LaManda, I'll let you talk on that because I was involved at just the right time, and I know you did all the legwork and the planning before I was involved. So,
well, actually, there's a committee at the Field Museum called A Greener Field that have been working internally to get this garden established. It's a community garden for Field Museum employees, and so about, I guess, a year and a half ago, one of our volunteers works at the Field Museum, and she said, hey, we're trying to get this garden started. Would you mind coming and doing your Victory Garden lecture for our Greener Field team? I'm like, sure, that'd be fun. So I went and did that and met some of the team, and we started talking about what they would like to have for a garden. And since I had some experience with community gardens, we started brainstorming, like, well, you know, how could we do this garden and how could we tie it in with what the museum's mission is? So having been a huge fan of Seed Savers Exchange for a number of years, we started thinking about calling it an edible treasures garden to draw the correlation between seed diversity and the cultural beauty of all that being as valuable a collection as the gem collection or any other of the other wonderful things at the Field Museum. So that's how Diane got involved. But once we sort of designed the garden, we worked with Hairshot Landscapers to design the garden. We had the concept of the edible treasures. I helped the Greener Field team whenever they needed it, but they really worked within the organization of the Field Museum to work it through the system and figure out how it would work and deal with any of the issues that would, you know, safety and ADA and all that. So they worked very hard internally to make that happen. And we were able to start installing it about 3 weeks ago after, you know, 16 months of working on it.
Oh, okay. That's what I was going to ask. I'm thinking, okay, it's the Field Museum, for crying out loud. There must be, how many layers of administration do you go through to get something like this done? And I guess the answer is about 16 months worth of layers.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a world-renowned organization, so they have really, really high standards and a lot of, you know, it has to be ADA compliant, has to, the pest committee had to make sure that it would work. You know, there are a lot of people that wanted it to be a good thing. So they took the time they needed to make sure that it was right.
And so you come into this, Diane, and you are with the Seed Savers Exchange, the largest nonprofit seed bank in the United States.
Non-governmental seed bank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you're always very clear about that. It's like non-governmental because the government saves seeds too, I take it.
Right. They have the National Seed Storage Facility in Fort Collins. I think of Seed Savers, and I was reminded a little bit of what you were saying about how people went door to door. We're a grassroots organization, and that's how we started, was just, you know, networking people together. So the people, you know, is really the strength of our organization as well, or made it grow and provided the foundation for our work today. Fortunately, we had, when LaManda talked to me about this garden, and, you know, the most important thing about a garden is having the seeds available to plant in the garden. And I was so happy to have the opportunity to bring attention to that in the Field Museum, because the seeds are so important. They're what everyone eats, and seeds provide food for the world, and it's also for fiber, and it's a vibrant, diverse plant community is necessary for our survival. So anytime I had an opportunity to bring that to people's attention, I was, you know, I was very willing to do that. and told Amanda to talk to me about putting Seed Saver seeds in that garden, which I think is very appropriate. We probably have many seeds that are still available that were grown in 1942, thanks to our members and our efforts to keep these varieties of seeds alive.
You didn't try to get seeds that that King Tut would have had in his garden.
No, but very interestingly, Diane and I went to the museum on Monday, and we got to go into the botany collection, and mm-hmm. they have drawers and drawers and drawers of corn and wheat and all these things that were somewhere at the Columbian Exposition. So it's part of their collection. None of them are viable, of course, but it was really...
You don't know that. Well, I mean, Diane, I mean, it is possible that one of those seeds could germinate, right, Diane?
I would never say never, so it's possible, but probably a more likely possibility is that some of that seed is still being kept at Fort Collins in their seed collection, or maybe we have some of those seeds growing in our collection. We have 24,000 different accessions of seeds that we've been preserving. So it would be interesting to do a cross-reference to get those variety names that you have in the Field Museum, because chances are they've not been stored properly for all those years.
And you should see Lamanda here. She's shaking her head. No. They're not going to germinate. None of those seeds.
Okay, she says no. I say never. I never say no. But
good. I'm with you, Diane, but Lamanda, continue.
Well, it's kind of, you know, you go and look at that collection, it's sort of like that final scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where they're going in the warehouse and there's all the boxes and boxes and boxes, mm-hmm. except for a seed geek. It's all these aisles and aisles and aisles of different things. It's really phenomenal. I told the collections lady that this winter, once the gardening is over, if she needs somebody geeky to come in and help catalog things, I'd be happy to help.
And you would. You would do this.
What the strength of that collection is, though, is preserving the history and the stories. And even if the seed is not viable, it's a wonderful educational tool so people are aware of what all existed and what has been lost. And I think that brings it to our attention that, you know, we don't want our seeds just to end up in a museum. We want them to be grown in people's gardens again. Not that there'd be anything wrong with preserving the stories and the history in a museum, but I really like the idea of bringing these seeds to life at the Field Museum and having a living garden that really ties in with the work, because it's a living preservation project. It's living history, and it's growing right outside the Field Museum, and it's, you know, it's just such a wonderful concept. And the one thing I did plant, and Amanda and I had fun, is called dinosaur kale.
I love dinosaur kale. Love it.
Yes. Yeah, and so that would be growing right in front of the dinosaur. What did we call him? The broccoli?
Broccoliosaurus.
Broccoliosaurus.
Yes. Okay. So we tried to do some things that were, you know, fun to tie it in, because gardening has to be fun in addition to providing food and beauty to our life and diversity. You know, it's really fun to see all the names that were given to these plants over the years. And it all relates to some story. Every seed has a story. And that's why, you know, so this is a perfect example of bringing seeds to life and preserving and showing how we're preserving the stories as well as the seeds.
Well, what I'm going to do is I need to get some business done here, but I want to talk about the themes of the plants that you put in this garden, why you chose, obviously, dinosaur kale. Yeah, I get that. there's a few other things that you put in there.
Sure.
And then talk about a little bit about the organics of the garden and the practical side of the construction and the soil and how you're going to maintain it. On the phone, Diane Ott-Wheely from Seed Savers Exchange, Lamanda Joy from Peterson Garden Project, you're welcome to call in if you want to contribute. If not, listen and enjoy on an Easter Sunday morning, 773-763-9278. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Got critters? You need to pick up some Bonide Repels All animal repellent. Repels All is an all-natural repellent that uses smell, taste, and irritation to keep those nibbling rabbits, squirrels, deer, chipmunks, and raccoons at bay. If you're concerned about the ingredients, well, listen to this. It's garlic, dried blood, whole egg solids, clove, fish oil, onion, Wintergreen sounds like breakfast. Unlike other commercial repellents, Repels All has no unpleasant odor. It's rainfast after 6 hours and effective for up to 2 months guaranteed. Repels All natural formula can be applied to trees, shrubs, perennials, and around edible crops. It also works to prevent animals from chewing on fences and other questionably delicious structures. Repels All is available in concentrate, ready to use, and ready to spray liquid formulations and in easy to spread granules. Look for Repels All products at these fine stores: Allsip Home and Garden in St. John, Indiana, and also Frankfort, Illinois, Hawthorne Gardens in Hawthorne Woods, Illinois, Busy Bee in Glenwood, Illinois, or visit Bonide.com to locate a retailer near you. While you're there, download the free Bonide Problem Solver app for use on your iPhone or your Droid.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
We all face challenges in life, but put those serious ones aside and focus on challenges in your garden at a free gardening seminar at Pesci's next Saturday, April 14th from 9 to 10 a.m. Mike Minona and Rich Bailey from Mariani Nurseries in Garden Prairie, Illinois, in Kenosha, Wisconsin, will talk about how to make the best use of your outdoor space using both woody and herbaceous plants and what natural elements you can best utilize that won't require a lot of maintenance. The free seminar, yes, it's free, is Saturday, April 14th from 9 to 10 a.m., and it's going to take place in the beautiful and spacious educational auditorium at Pesci's in Des Plaines. If you haven't seen the auditorium, it's really cool. While you're there, you could always pick up some of the beautiful annuals on sale, like pansies and violas, primroses, ranunculus, sweet alyssum. I tell you, we went out to Pesci's last week. It was one of the places we stopped on the Dig in Chicago, the World Tour 2012, Dig in Chicago. The alyssum is just overpowering sometimes at this time of year. There are cool season as well as warm season veggies. Okay, now, kids, listen to me. It's going to get cold this week. Don't think you can just rush out and get a tomato and a pepper and slam it in the ground. You're going to lose it. So don't get the warm veggies unless you know what you're doing. As we said on the show when Jennifer Brennan was here, if you plant early, you will plant often. Keep that in mind. But if you know what you're doing, sure, pick up some tomatoes or peppers. They got them out there at Pesci's. And Pesci's Garden Center is just minutes off of I-294 at 170 South River Road in Des Plaines. For more information, visit them online at Pesci's.com. Pesci's, three generations of attentive service, expert advice, and uncompromising quality. Yeah, kind of song you want to play on Easter. Happy Easter, everybody. I'm going to start a fight.
I want to start a fight.
Okay. LaManda Joy is in the studio from the Peterson Garden Project. Diane Ott-Wheely is on the line. And actually, we have another call here. Let me get to the... okay, yeah. Let's go to the phone and bring in Bill from the North Side. Bill, you're on the Mike Novak Show.
Hi guys, thanks for having me on. I definitely don't want to start a fight here, and hopefully I've got a peaceable solution here for you for something. I live at Devon and Ridge, and the neighbors and I really would love to beautify this neighborhood and make it more of a community oriented place as well. And the city just recently, I think last year, put up a big Rogers Park Edgewater sign. Over the Metro tracks at Devon here. There's a stretch along the metro tracks that would be wonderful for perhaps a tiered garden. But there's also space, I think, that could be utilized for a community garden there as well. And I wanted to get Amanda's thoughts and or advice on maybe how to get that done.
If anybody has advice on that, I would think it would be Lamanda.
I would think so.
Well, that's great. That I love it that people identify empty places for gardens. I call it lot lust. So, Bill, you have it. That's great. I think the first step is to reach out to your alderman. Who's the alderman in your area?
Silverstein, I believe, is the alderman here on this side of the tracks. The other side is Joe Moore, who I do have a relationship with and who's a great alderman, actually.
Well, you know, I can speak a little bit about Deborah. She's helping us with a big garden over on Jersey and Lincoln that we're calling Stars Garden. It's the site of an old one of those no-tell motels, and the sign's still up. It's by the drive-through Starbucks.
Yeah,
and she's been incredibly supportive and helpful with that, so I'm sure that she would be open to listening to road. You know, that's probably Northern Pacific property, so there might have to be some discussions about that. But I know that...
Yeah, and actually I've had some tentative discussions with them as we've worked through this a little bit, and it's problematic for them, too. And regularly they're coming along the tracks here to cut down the trees that grow there, because it's not utilized land, and it just becomes an issue for them as well.
Right. Well, you know, Bowmanville has done a very successful job of planting along the railroad tracks. You can see that if you go a little farther south. I'd be happy to talk with you about it more if you want to send me an email at info@petersongarden.org. We can talk through it and see what we can do.
What about using neighbor space for something like that?
Yeah, neighbor space acquires property that's city-owned, so that's definitely a possibility. Ben and I work a lot together on
that's Ben Helphand from Neighbor Space.
Yeah.
So you might want to look into Neighbor Space as well, Bill.
I certainly shall. Thanks, guys. I really appreciate that advice, and I definitely will reach out to Ms. Silverstein.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Be well.
Have a great day.
Bye-bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. See, we're here to help you get your garden started. I like the lot lust.
it's a condition.
It is. And there's no cure.
No cure.
None.
Well, putting in a community garden.
Well, there you go. That's how you cure that. Diane Utwiley, how did you go about figuring out which seeds and plants you wanted to put in there? And the other day when you guys were planting, there were seeds, there were starter plants. Those wonderful heirloom purple potatoes.
Right.
What variety was that?
Yeah, that was called the all blue potato. And when you cook it, it continues to maintain the color, which is, you know, kind of unusual. A lot of the potatoes will turn gray. The colored potatoes will turn gray when cooked, and that's not so special. But this one, you know, stays pretty after it's cooked or roasted as well. And it's called the all blue potato.
What I loved about it is that when you cut it open to plant it, I mean, you cut it into sections to plant. They call it blue, but it's this rich, luscious purple,
and it
glistens. And it's just amazing. Then it sort of fades a little bit in the sun when it dries, but when you first cut it, it's so juicy.
Mm-hmm. And that's one that I chose just because of all those things that you described. I thought I wanted, you know, because we had a lot of potatoes that we could have planted, but that one was just so spectacular. Just the inside of it was, so I was hoping we'd get some good shots of that. So the criteria that I kind of, that's one. They had to be, to me, beauty is so important in a garden. So I was trying to go through, 23,000 different accessions of seeds. I had lots of choices, so I had to limit what I was going to bring. But the criteria turned out, which usually is the criteria for a collection as well, that the seed had a good history. It was edible. That seems odd, but some seed is more decorative than edible. Beautiful, as I said, educational, that it had a story that could be tied to some part of the museum. And that also the other part is that all the seed is, that this garden is sustainable because you could save the seed from the plants that I planted in the garden. So if that's something that's important in your garden, so these seeds are all non hybrid heirloom open pollinated varieties, so you can save the seed from year to year from those varieties. But I chose, like, some were historical. The Mayflower bean was brought over on the Mayflower in 1620. Of course, it was not that bean. It's that bean that's been grown in a family from generation to generation since then. So that's I love the story about that, how that seed was maintained and kept alive from 1620 to today. The purple potted pole bean, I planted some of those just because they're beautiful and edible. And another bean I planted was the scarlet runner bean, and that dates back to the 1750s. So, you know, a lot of these varieties are very historic, and they have stories. Let's see, what else did I plant? I planted with the kale. I do a lot of planting with, or I combine flowers, herbs, vegetables, prairie plants, everything in the same garden. And so in that, so the garden is always, you never know what's going to be happening, first of all, because things volunteer and come back from year to year in my garden. So I put kale with the lavender because the lavender was blooming and there was a pretty purple blossom, because I like to have something that's instant in a garden, and transplants work, do that for me, because some of these things I don't plant from seed anyway. So lavender is also good companion with the kale because the blossoms will repel a lot of the cabbage beetles that come. So that's kind of a fun. I do a lot of combinations of companion plantings in my plans.
Diane, can I stop you for a second? Give me because I try to get out good information to my listeners. And what are some of those plantings that work well in a vegetable garden plants that work as companion plants for each other?
Sure. And I should have mentioned with the beans, I planted tarragon, because that repels a lot of the insects that would bother the beans. Plus, in the culinary use, beans and tarragon are a great pairing, so that is even better. I do a lot with marigolds, of course. I think a lot of people have been doing that. I like to pair marigolds with any squash, because it helps repel the squash beetles. And one thing about the older varieties or the old-fashioned annual flowers that we have at Seed Savers that we're preserving, they have not been changed at all. So the marigolds that you might find in your nurseries in this time of the year might have been bred for different purposes, because a lot of people don't like the scent of a marigold. So they've actually bred the scent out. So you want to be careful when you're getting marigolds that it's an old-fashioned variety, because I've had a lady complain that the bugs ate the marigolds because they didn't have them scent. So you want to, you know, make sure the old-fashioned flowers are the ones to look for. Also, the old-fashioned flowers have more pollen and nectar, so you want to attract pollinators to your garden, and I think that's a real important thing these days, because our natural, our beneficial insects and our butterflies and hummingbird moths and everything are being threatened because they don't have enough pollen and nectar found in the open field as they did in the past.
Yeah, you know, here we are. We think we're improving plants, and sometimes really not so much.
Well, it's a process, you know.
You learn as you go, and sometimes you get it right, and sometimes it serves one purpose but not another.
Mm-hmm. So come with a plant that I use a lot, too, that serves as a good pollinator is called Bee's Friend. It's a variety that came from Germany, and that is planted in the gardens in Germany just for that reason, to attract bees.
What is Bee's Friend?
Bee's Friend is a ground cover. It has purple leaves and purple flowers. I'm not going to know the exact. We offer it in our catalog or online at seedsavers.org. It's just called Bee's Friend.
See, I've never heard of that. That's really interesting.
It was sent to me from a lady who got the seed from Germany, because she said, I can't find it here in the U.S. anywhere. So she thought Seed Savers should have it. So we took that, and we've been growing it and offering it ever since. And it's also a good cover crop. It's like a clover type thing, and it reseeds, which is also nice.
All right, so, I want to get to a couple. We just have a few minutes left here, Diane. You talk about growing this in heirloom varieties, and maybe Lamanda, you can help me with this. Did you set this up so that they're going to harvest the seeds in the fall?
Yeah, we'll be having some classes at the end of the season and potentially classes with the public, too, so people can learn how to do some seed saving.
Mm-hmm. And which would make sense, and then you put it back into the garden next year, and of course with some new varieties or different varieties,
sure.
If you want.
And then you'll all be seed savers, which is the most important thing we can do in the gardening community. So,
yes,
growing a community.
And I would be remiss if I didn't mention your new book, Gathering, Memoir of a Seed Saver. I want to give a chance to sell a few copies of that. That's,
sure.
I'm all about the PR. tell me about your book, Diane.
Well, Gathering, it was released last summer, and it's the history of seed savers because we started seed savers with a dream and a handful of seeds 35 years ago, and today we have 24,000 different accessions of seed. We have a farm in Decorah, Iowa, so we've grown into a full-fledged organization now, one of the largest nonprofit non-governmental seed banks in the country. So that story is quite interesting because how we took a mission and dream and grew it to where we got to today and all the struggles and the joys and the laughter that is involved in that process. Plus, we wanted to recognize all the people who have helped us in the organization. As I mentioned earlier, we're a grassroots organization. People and seeds are the most important thing in our organization. And Gathering, kind of, that's a theme that is through the whole book, is how important people, seeds, stories, and how Seed Savers was able to gather all of these groups together. And today we're this wonderful organization working still to save and preserve and distribute heirloom varieties of seed. When we started this 35 years ago, you know, it wasn't so popular. Heirloom was not a popular term to describe tomatoes or any kind of vegetable. So we've come a long way. And so it's a story of sticking to a dream and building a dream.
And if you want that book, you can go to my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. There's a link to the book. But, of course, you can always go to seedsavers.org and find it there as well. I have one more question before I let you go. Is there one seed, the one that got away? Is there something that you've been after for 35 years that you haven't been able to get a hold of?
Well, that's an interesting question. We did have that a few years back, and it was the Moon and Stars watermelon. That was definitely a variety we thought had disappeared from the seed trade, and we were able to find that and increase the seed of that and put it back into the mainstream seed catalogs today. So, but I mean, there are so many things. We don't know what has been what has been lost, but we know we've saved a lot that's been precious in our culture, and so that's what we'll continue to do. But yeah, I wish there was I know there's it's fun to think about something that's told, and there are many things that have disappeared, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to be able to speak of one right now.
That's okay.
I did want to mention too that all the proceeds from the sale of our book and all the seeds from seeds that you purchase from Seed Savers goes back into the preservation of that variety. And also we have our seeds in the store in the Field Museum, which is wonderful because when you see something growing out in the garden, you know, chances are the seed will be available in the shop. So it's a wonderful opportunity to really have all the tools that you need to be an heirloom gardener.
Will the public have access to the garden? Or?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, great. Yeah. That's so cool. All right. Well, listen, Diane Ott-Wheely from Seed Savers Exchange, thank you so much. It was an honor to meet you, and I can't wait till Dig in Chicago comes out with that episode. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. That episode will air, I believe, the third week of the show. The third episode, which airs, I believe, May 19th and 26th. That's when we'll see that one. Go to seedsavers.org. And Diane, I hope we talk again in the future.
Be my pleasure. Thank you.
Have a great Easter Sunday.
Thank you. Bye, Bye-bye. Lamanda.
Bye.
Lamanda, hang around for our sec, at least till the end of the show. We got more stuff coming up, and feel free to kibitz.
Okay. I like to kibitz.
And tweet.
Because
I know
like
you're tweeting like crazy over there. Okay. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. As devastating as the Emerald Ash Borer has been in the Midwest, it's important to know that there's hope. A group of university scientists and industry professionals called the Coalition for Urban Ash Tree Conservation issued this statement last year. Quote, despite availability of cost-effective treatments, many municipalities, property managers, and homeowners continue to rationalize tree removal as the only viable management strategy for EAB. This is based on erroneous beliefs that tree removal slows the spread of EAB or that treatment is not effective, economical, or environmentally sound. Actually, one of the episodes of Dig in Chicago will have a conversation that I had with Sean Kingzette from the Care of Trees about Emerald Ash Borer and how you can save your ash trees. So I hope you'll check that out. To make sure your ash trees have the best possible chance against Emerald Ash Borer, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
I love gardening. What I don't love to see is deer and rabbits destroy my beautiful plants.
Why let your garden be destroyed? PlantSkid Repellent protects your garden, trees, and landscaping from wildlife damage. Made in the USA from 100% organic environment and pet-friendly ingredients, PlantSkid is the number one, most tested, most effective, and longest-lasting deer and rabbit repellent you can buy. It lasts up to 6 months over winter and 3 to 4 months during the active spring-summer growing season. Unlike other repellents, PlantSkid will not wash off in the rain and is guaranteed to outlast and outperform all other repellents. PlantSkid is OMRI-listed organic and is proven effective protection from deer, rabbits, squirrels, and other small rodents. That's why PlantSkid is used by leading forest companies, nurseries, and conservation agencies, and is member-tested and recommended by the National Home Gardening Club. Locate a dealer nearest you at PlantSkid.com. Proven plant protection. Guaranteed, or your money back.
PlantSkid. That's spelled plant, S-K-Y-D-D. PlantSkid.
Spring is blooming at Allsip Nursery, and right now they have everything you'll need to get your yard and garden in shape. Cold hardy pansies are now in stock. Plant them outside in the garden beds or containers for a burst of color. Pansies are one of the few frost-tolerant annuals, as you know, and they come in a rainbow of awesome colors. And if you want to have the best lawn on the block, you can start right now. Allsip has all the best brands, including organic fertilizers, grass seed, and weed controls from Jonathan Green. So get to Allsip Nursery in Frankfort, Illinois on Route 45, just 2 miles south of I-80, and in St. John, Indiana on Route 41, 4 miles south of Route 30, and online at allsipnursery.com, A-L-S-I-P, nursery.com. Hey, they're open today, Easter Sunday, so I'll tell you what, if you're driving by and you stop in, just say, Mike told me to stop in. He said, if I'm driving by, I might as well get an Easter lily or a pot of beautiful flowering bulbs for Grandma, because we're on our way to her place for Easter. Stop in and say hi. Now, the next time you walk or bike along any of the 62 miles of the Illinois Prairie Path in DuPage County, think about the fact that it was the nation's first rails-to-trails conversion back in 1963. And as you stroll along the Illinois and Michigan Canal National Heritage Corridor on the banks of the waterway that helped make Chicago an iconic transportation hub in the 19th century, keep in mind that more than 40 National Heritage Corridors now exist, but the one in Illinois was the first. Those are just two of the success stories of the remarkable organization called Openlands, which will celebrate its 50th anniversary next year. In those 50 years, Openlands has helped save, secure, and provide public access to more than 55,000 acres of land in northeastern Illinois and the surrounding region. If you can think of a way to preserve, advocate for, and celebrate our green spaces, Openlands has probably done it. Volunteer your time, donate to a project, or just enjoy one of their many public spaces by going to openlands.org. Openlands, conserving nature for life. We'll be right back. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Before I go to my next guest, LaManda, you wanted to get in a quick word about registration at the Peterson Garden Project?
That's right. We have registration open for... We have five pop-up Victory Gardens this year. One of them filled up within 24 hours at the Montrose Brown Line stop. But the other ones, we have a little bit of space left. So if you live on the north side, you want to get to know your neighbors, you want to learn how to grow some food, go ahead and check it out at www.petersongarden.org.
And I will attest to how you learn who your neighbors are when you do a community garden.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
It just brings people together. Just great stuff. Let's go to the phones and bring in Maureen Ewing with the Green Metropolis Fair. Maureen, good morning.
Morning, Mike.
How are you?
I'm just wonderful. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter to you. You got a big event next week, and I'm going to be part of it. Happy to be speaking on organic gardening. I should bring LaManda to help me with it. Then I could coast. Maybe we will. Maybe we'll tag team. Were you planning to go to the fair?
When is it?
It's next Saturday, the 14th, and I'm at 2:45.
I could potentially join you. We're doing a garden build day that morning at the Montrose Green Garden, but I could probably get up.
Well, in my own garden, we're having a rummage sale, so I got to get out of there too. So
It's a busy day.
Well, you know, every Saturday is a busy day in spring. There's always stuff going on, and this the Green Metropolis Fair just sounds fabulous. I got a lot of the stuff on my website about it. If you go to MikeNovak.net, this week's show. You know, you're going to have farm animals. Woo!
We are.
And a rain barrel bonanza and ask a master gardener and master composter. I love the master gardeners, and it's great when they can stop by at a table and just answer questions for people. You're going to learn about iGo car sharing, information about the Green Exchange, which is, I have to admit, Maureen, I've not been to the Green Exchange yet.
It's, you know, it's one of these buildings that's been in conversation for so many years and finally it opened up last summer. So we are very excited to have the fair there. There's over 18 tenants there practicing sustainability, small and large tenants, and it's a beautiful building. So we're very excited to be there.
And this is your fourth year of the fair, right?
It is. It is.
And how did this fair come together?
Well, Mary Beth Rebido and I from Green Parents Network, we've been working together for a couple years, and last year we did quite a large fair together, and we decided to make it even larger this year. So we've been working closely together throughout the year to try to bring together as many different local businesses as we could and really get the gardening aspect of our fair up and running, which we're really excited about. So it's really in our minds about figuring out ways to connect all these wonderful local businesses and organizations and get them in our curious public eye, you know, to get people out and hearing about it, starting the conversation.
And you are going to get to go, or you're going to be at the Green Exchange. How did you manage to snare that?
Well, the Green Exchange had been interested in hosting us ever since last year's fair because they saw what a wonderful turnout we had, and they were getting ready to open the following summer, and because of the fact that the Green Exchange is becoming the sustainability hub in Chicago, you know, it's on the road to being certified LEED Platinum, and it's just a really great, beautiful building where it's really emphasizing sustainability and local businesses. You know, there's a beautiful garden there. They're going to have their own garden in back, which is going to be operated by We Farm America, and a lot of that food will be in the restaurant that's hopefully going to be opening sometime this summer or fall. So it's really this closed circle community that they're trying to have a farm there, bees on the roof, and there's a bike room. There's all kinds of great things to make it as much of a sustainable building as possible for everybody who works there.
Yeah, and people who come to the fair, well, that's part of it. You can learn more about the Green Exchange. I'm sure that's what the Green Exchange people want, too, to have right. folks come in and see what they're up to.
Exactly.
And some of the speakers, Christy Weber is going to be there from Christy Weber Landscapes, and she's a great advertiser on the Mike Novak Show. And I guess she's going to introduce me, so that's cool. Seneca Kern from We Farm America, you mentioned them. Jen Lassa from Rooftopia. Jim Halm from Pleasant Valley Landscapes, Amber Gribben from Urban Worm Girls. Love the Urban Worm Girls. They're superheroes. I don't know if that's, you know, Urban Worm Girl.
They are.
And they are, really. And, of course, this year, sort of the focus is organic gardening. It's really, you're sort of, you know, going all out and presenting that side of the gardening issue.
We have a whole room dedicated to all things garden, from starting a community garden to backyard chickens, which is such a trend right now, keeping bees, composting, balcony gardening for people who live in apartments and just have small balconies, and what organic alternatives you can use for your garden in terms of chemicals. So there's just a nice range of how to get that garden going and how to get people getting their fingers dirty in their own gardens.
And some of the, yeah, you mentioned some of those seminars, starting a community garden, going native, backyard chickens, as you mentioned, keeping bees, urban composting, balcony gardening, organic alternatives to garden chemicals. And then you've got about greening. You've got the USGBC is going to be presenting a seminar on turning existing homes green. There's a water seminar. The Metropolitan Water Reclamation District is going to be talking about water. And Dr. Don Harris on nutrition and health. You guys got everything, and it's free.
Best part about it, really.
Yeah. So you start at 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
And go till 6. And just in case anybody's interested, I'm at 2:45. 2:45 to 3:15. Boy, that's a half hour to get all that. I could speak for about 6 hours if you want. I'll have people there till midnight if you want.
Well, I'm sure you will be talking a lot with people afterwards, because people are so excited that you're going to be coming. And we have so many topics to cover. It's a shame that they're so short, but we hope people come out in throngs and stay and get to talk with you and get some ideas and talk to the master gardeners and just get people really excited about that.
And, of course, it's at the Green Exchange, 2545 West Diversey. It's just off the Kennedy. That's the great thing. It's, you know, you just get off the Kennedy to Diversey and bam, you're there. It's all things organic next week at the Green Metropolis Fair. What did we miss, Maureen?
Well, in addition to it not only being free, and we'll have free entry and free bike check, but we're also doing yoga at the fair. Free
oh, that's
yoga
right.
Classes.
Yeah, yeah. Yoga. I missed that. Yeah. You just bring your own mat.
Yeah, so they'll have some extras in case someone decides or doesn't have a mat. You can certainly still come. Moksha Yoga Center is doing their free class from 11 to noon. And then from 2 to 3, Thai yoga and body work from Andrea Klunder from Infuse Yoga Spa. So we're really excited to have them both as part of this year's fair as well.
Great. Well, Maureen, thanks so much. I will see you there next week. You're hearing about it on WCPT because we've been advertising it. And I hope we just pack the place next Saturday.
Mm-hmm. We're so excited that you're going to be with us, Mike.
Well, I appreciate that very much. And I will see you then.
Wonderful.
Take care now.
See you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wait, what's that sound? Is that your soil I hear? Is it sick? Call the doctor. Dr. Earth, that is. Dr. Earth's probiotics, a soil inoculant, is chock full of soil bacteria and mycorrhizal fungi that help break down organic materials to make nutrients available to your plants. No cheap fillers here, only organic goodies that will make your garden not only survive, but thrive. Doctor Your Earth with Dr. Earth, the multivitamin for your garden. Sold only at independent garden centers. Go to drearth.com to find a dealer near you, and be sure to check out the Facebook page. Enter Dr. Earth and click like for organic updates.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312 312- 642-7545 or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Remember those heady days of March when temperatures were in the 80s and you thought you were going to have ripe tomatoes by Mother's Day? You silly, silly person, you. You need a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, which keeps you tethered to planet Earth. And there's still time to get a copy of the March-April issue, which includes the annual resource guide, your key to garden centers, tools, supplies and seeds, soil fertilizers, mulch and compost, power equipment, as well as services like paving, irrigation systems, tree services, lighting, contractors, and lawn and maintenance. You name it. It's a separate, smaller magazine that you can hang on to all year long. In the big magazine, you're going to learn about the best spring flowering trees, 33 of them jammed into one story with photos. Of course, this year, many of them have already bloomed. That's showbiz, folks. Then there's my column on the inside back page. You might like it and you might not. Hey, that's showbiz, folks. Get a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. That's it. Three-point landing. How about that, Dennis?
We're good.
Yeah. All right. Let's get out of here. Let's enjoy Easter. Lamanda Joy, thank you for coming down.
Oh, thank you. I love being with you, Mike, on the show.
Well, it's always fun to have you here. And, of course, all you folks who got your blue carts this week, put them in the alley. Don't put garbage in there, okay? It ain't going to work. Please don't do that. And we're going to try to get the educational thing going. I'll have a talk with Rahm Emanuel. Go green or go home.